Raise your hand if you've ever watched a TED Talk. Oh, good, good. Raise your hand if you've ever watched three or more TED Talks. They start to all sound the same. You get the point. It's always someone's personal revelation, sort of the Aesop's fable of their life by the end. Here's the five-word summation of what I've learned in a life. So as I was preparing this sermon, I came to realize that it wasn't actually a sermon. It was a poorly constructed TED Talk. So I'm an approximate TED Talk without a PowerPoint slides behind me. But I do have the headset microphone, so I'm halfway there. You'll notice over the holidays I'm going to talk about a few terms that I think are poorly defined. I think there are a lot of words we use communally, linguistically, among our family, among our culture, that we don't really grasp, that have no concrete and universally shared definition. I think one of those terms is leadership. We throw about that term, X is a great leader, Y is not a good leader, Z is a demagogue but not a great leader, but leadership is hazy. What it means is something that each of us poorly define in our own terms. And over the course of the past couple of years, I'll give a preface. Rabbinical school was great. I learned Talmud. I learned modern Hebrew. I learned to read rabbinic texts. I had very little managerial and leadership courses. So in the past couple of years, I've started taking courses at UT Haslam. And whatever you think about business school classes, whether leaders and business advocates can be made or taught, what it at the very least has forced me to do is to evaluate what I know of, what I believe about, how I define leadership. And such definition is not very easy. It's slippery and elusive. In the Talmud, it's described the ushering in of the Messiah, what that age will be like. Not unlike many Christian colleagues who believe in the rapture, there is a sense that the age just prior to the Anointed One's arrival will be a lousy time. In Masechet Sota, they say that in the footsteps of the Messiah, that is the age prior to his or her arrival, the face of the generation, the leaders of the generation, will share the face of a dog. Which description we've kind of lost. I mean, does it mean they're hideous or animal or lupine? But Yisrael Salanter, the 19th century Lithuanian rabbi who spoke in the Musar tradition, who more or less started the Musar tradition, the ethical living and ethical precept tradition, talked about it this way. And I'm reminded of that guy, the dog whisperer. Is that show still on? Have you ever seen a man and a dog walking, says Rabbi Yisrael? The dog often runs ahead. So to the casual observer, it seems that the dog is the leader. But every now and again, the dog turns around to see where the master wants to go and changes direction accordingly. I think what he's saying about that comment in Talmud is that in the era just prior to the great age, the world to come, the roughness of the age will be that the leaders will actually be followers. But again, still poorly defined. Is the goal of leadership to be like a dog owner, to be an alpha, to force others to submit to your will by leash and collar? I don't think so. So this sermon grew out of a moment that happened during my vacation in July. I spend most of the summer, my summer vacation, with my parents up on the beach in Massachusetts. And the kids and I are all in much smaller quarters than we're used to. It's the polite way of describing it. And they don't sleep well when they're all fired up after a long day. And they're all sharing about a bed and a half. And they were tussling and talking and asking questions. And usually I'd read to them and sing to them and say the goodnight Shema with them, which I'm sure I did that night, and they still couldn't settle down. So I lied on my bed and pretended to be asleep. And they'd start talking to me, and I wouldn't respond. I'd just breathe deeply, maybe yawn occasionally, stretch, just to give them the semblance of what it was like to sleep. But they still... Yeah, I don't know the semblance of what it's like to sleep for me. They've been getting up at 5:30. But it still didn't slow them down very quickly. They still were giggling and laughing and wrestling. But I noticed they were slowly, slowly quieting. And I had to stick it out a lot longer than I expected. And I'd noticed that one of them would drop off to sleep and maybe come back awake, but drop off to sleep again, and then the second, and finally all three. And all I did was just lie there, consistently, quietly, patiently. And I don't know where this formulation came from, but I realized that's at least what I think of as leadership. That you model a certain behavior, you stick it out, and you try to do it with as little anxiety as possible. You model some distinct, some slice of behavior, some action. You don't stop because it would be convenient. And you don't worry about it when everyone doesn't follow along with you right away. That's a definition of leadership. That's my understanding of leadership that I've come to in some years as a rabbi and decades of living and in a few semesters at UT Haslam. And I want to kind of expand on that for the rest of our time this morning. So I talk about modeling a certain behavior. In our tradition, they call that Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, that the actions of our ancestors are a sign or a guidepost to their children, to their descendants. Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. And Nachmanides, the medieval scholar, explains it probably the best. He says that everything that happens to the patriarchs and matriarchs is a signpost for their children, Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. And that's why the Torah elaborates its accounts of their journeys, both our patriarchs, to the extent Moses in the wilderness generation. We get maybe excessive detail about all the places they stopped and got food and water. And we get the other events in their lives. They all come as an instruction for the future. Instruction, the word most commonly translated as instruction, of course, is Torah. A lesson, a teaching, an ethical treatise and will for us. And I thought about this further that night in July. Once I came to this definition, I thought to myself, so what are the messages that people convey with their leadership, whether in small and intimate ways or in larger and public ways? And I thought about people who had been leaders to me, people who had inspired me, some of whom I had a pithy aphorism that encapsulated their leadership, and for others I don't. But I'll share with you what I've thought about, what their lessons, what the certain behavior was in their lives. So one time, Leon Hasden used to sit right here. He'd get here very early, sit near Dale's plaque. And I would ask him how he was doing. He hasn't had an easy life, hadn't had an easy life. A daughter died young, and his wife died fairly young. To which one might expect that he would be pessimistic or bitter, and he never was. His statement was, "Love God, and God will love you." I remember him saying that to me, and I wrote it down. That was the message of his life. That was the behavior he modeled consistently and without anxiety, with courage and faith. And then there's Mindy Goldberg. Alehem HaShalom, that peace may be upon these two wonderful people, whom we remember guiding us, telling who to come up, and recognizing us and loving us, being a model for me of how to be a parent, how to be a Jew. Her editorial readings when she'd come up to the Ark, so many other things. And for a long time, I thought Mindy was in denial about her illness. I mean, no one survives pancreatic cancer. No one. It's not a good diagnosis. She surpassed by a long time the typical diagnosis to death. And that's about as good as you get with pancreatic cancer. And she was always so upbeat, even during treatments. And I thought, well, Mindy must just be denying her reality. She just must be living in a fantasy that she's gonna beat it. She wasn't. She said to me once on the phone, and I think she said this to other people, "Each day I wake up with a choice. I can die or I can walk through fire. So I walk through fire." I didn't give her eulogy, but it could have been just those words. That was Mindy. And if you look at broader public figures in this vein, I can't sum them up in a quotation, but I've tried to imagine that night and beyond what their message was. You know, Marion Bear offered prayer for healing for John McCain, and I've come out in the past year that I worked for John McCain in 2000. I didn't want to be known as having partisan politics, and I think in 2000 it wasn't partisan. It was about what he said and the way he spoke to me and to others, especially for me after I'd come back from the Peace Corps. I think McCain modeled courage and civility, models courage and civility, as you saw in his last speech at the Senate. When he hearkened back, drew people back to a time when people worked together, when people disagreed with each other but weren't disagreeable. That didn't lead to personal animus. I wrote him a letter recently, thanking him for the lessons he taught me. And then there was someone whose picture was in my office for quite a while, Aung San Suu Kyi, who is now effectively the leader of Burma. It's a lot harder once you're in office. But she was under house arrest, I think, for about 2 decades after a democratic election brought her to power and the ruling military junta annulled the election. She was always photographed. I mean, she was a beautiful woman physically also, but she was photographed with this calm. And the message of her leadership was resist. Don't lose yourself, resist. And then last in this list of people whose messages have been offered to us as leaders, someone none of you will know. But I realized over the summer when I came back in July for a weekend, this person, I wanted to visit this person in hospice, and she died hours after I arrived in Knoxville. Her name was Suzanne Van Sant Hassel. She was an ordained Presbyterian minister. She lived not far from the Floyds on Nubbin Ridge off a horse farm. She was my spiritual director for 7 years. I just found her on the internet. I called 2 people, and the other one didn't call me back quickly. And every month or so, I'd spend an hour with her talking about my difficulties. She didn't dress in fine robes. She didn't have an eloquent speaking voice. She didn't carry herself with the pomposity that some great religious leaders might. She was just honest and authentic, and taught me that all that I have and all that she had by modeling, that what she had, what you have is enough, just presence and authenticity. So those are some of the messages that we get. Those certain behaviors. That's not enough. I mean, everyone has personality quirks, but they don't become leadership, they don't become modeling unless you stick it out through thick and thin and you try to do it without anxiety. Let you do it with consistent courage and steadfast faith. Everyone models a behavior for a morning, but can you do it for years and decades, sometimes a lifetime? Can you do it through your illness, in hospice, through house arrest, through decades in the Senate, through the challenges of children and aging parents, through the vicissitudes of life and your work. You got to stick it out. You got to have courage. We're told that the Israelites, when they crossed the Red Sea, that the sea divided only after Israel stepped into it, when the waters reached their nose. That's one of the stories about mi kamocha ba'ilim Adonai, mi kamocha. The kamocha was the water was already reaching their lip. And they had to step in. Nachshon had to dive in. They had to show belief, courage, despite fear. There is no courage without fear. And we have moments, all of us, each of us, when maybe we stand up, we tell truth to power. We resist, we push, we try. But you have to do it consistently. You have to stick it out through thick and thin, through people name-calling, through people telling you that what you're doing is stupid or wrong-headed or self-serving. And only you in your heart know and sense the truth. That's what it really means to be a leader. There's this beautiful image after Korach's rebellion in the book of Numbers, where God smites the people of Israel with a plague, starts wiping them out. And to curtail the plague, Aaron, Moses' brother Aaron, takes a plate of incense and cuts through between the living and the dying, making a line, a crease, a separation between those who have died and those who are still living, and then the plague is stopped. And one of our sages say, he waited in order to help cure the ones who had taken sick but not died yet. Instead of distancing himself from the congregation, Aaron did the opposite in order to save whom he could save. And at that point, not a single Israelite was struck with the pestilence again. Can you do that? Can you do that? Can you be courageous amid terrifying circumstances? Hurricanes, repression, challenges to the rule of law, devastation in your own family, grief, illness. Can you step up, face down the angel of death, and be afraid? Be afraid, but be courageous. Make every moment of your life count. Stretch yourself in the face of daunting odds. Can you be like Moses, loving peace and Aaron, loving peace and seeking peace, standing as a wedge between the living and the dead, both seriously, literally, and metaphorically, whatever that means in your work? Modeling that life-giving ability that Aaron tried and stepping forward courageously. And can you do it authentically, without anxiety, without fear, or without undue fear, without letting the fear permeate your being? Can you do it, in other words, with a steadfastness, with faith, without knowing the outcome at the beginning? Montesquieu said that the success of most things depends upon knowing how long it will take to succeed. The success of many things takes, you have to know how long it will succeed. And he's wrong. He's wrong. You'll never know how long it takes. Of all the things you control in your life, one of the ones you control the least is how long things will take. That's what being steadfast means. That's what faith is. You don't have the answers. You don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know where it's going, and you step through the breach with as little anxiety as possible. And you keep doing that, and you keep doing that, and you do it again without knowing the outcome. And one day you live into a reality that you could only have imagined. Being yourself, doing it again and again. The blues musician Buddy Guy said to a friend of mine, they were saying, "Oh, you're such a great musician." And Buddy Guy turns to him and says, "You keep doing what you're doing. You can't remember anything else I say, just remember that. You keep doing what you're doing." That's what it comes down to. We all have things we live for, things we believe in, aspirations, actions we'd like to take. But can you keep it up? None of it counts unless you're consistent. As my rabbi said, the effect of sermons is cumulative. This sermon you'll forget. But if you come for a lot of years, maybe you'll start to get a message. I don't know what it will be. I do know what it'll be. I'll talk about that in a moment. And Blaise Pascal says that the strength of a man's virtue should not be measured by special exertions, but by habitual acts. Can you model a behavior that's important to you? Can you stick it out through thick and thin without anxiety? Being honest, authentic, courageous, and faithful, and steadfast. Of all the stories about Moses in Torah and in Midrash, well, there are so many. I don't know if this is my favorite. I was going to say it's my favorite, but I have a lot of favorites. There's a scene when God is about to destroy the people of Israel after they make the molten calf. And Moses says, God says, let me alone, I'm going to destroy them. And so Rabbi Abahu in the Talmud says, if we didn't know this, these lines from Deuteronomy and Exodus, we couldn't say the following. But the image it conveys to us, let me alone, that Moses is God is turning to Moses and saying, let me alone, is that Moses was grabbing his lapels. That Moses took hold of a man like one who would seize a garment, seize his fellow man by a garment, and said to God, Master of all the worlds, I will not let go until you forgive them and pardon them. That's a high standard. Don't kill yourselves with ridiculous expectations. But it's a good image to keep in mind. Life's going to kick you. Life's going to tell you that what you think is right is wrong. You're not going to see your success, maybe not even in your lifetime, of all the things you lived for, of all the things you wanted to embody, of all your virtues and values. And they may seem to disappear like dust, even in your own lifetime. And people may even say that you're the wicked one, that you're the one in the wrong, even when you know in your heart that can't be, no matter how much people try to gaslight you. Model what you care about. Do it consistently with steadfast faith. So without sounding vain, this is the part that really hits the TED Talk on the nail. That same night, months ago, I'm sitting there in the dark after the kids are asleep thinking about this theory that I'm coming up with. And you can throw it aside like any other theory. So I guess it's a hypothesis because there's not a lot of evidence yet for it to be a theory. But. And I said to myself, so what is my behavior when I look at Aung San Suu Kyi and John McCain and Mindy? So what is the behavior I want to model? And I don't want to overstate this. I don't want to sound vain or arrogant. But I just want to share with you in small part something from my heart. So the words that came to mind that night were, be yourself. That as Wolf Kellman says, every rabbi has one sermon and he preaches it his whole life. If you guys listened carefully to my sermons, you'd know so much about my interior world. But that's it. You know, I never was able to put it into words, but my message to you, to all of you, at all times, is be yourself. And maybe part of that is be your best self. That who you are, what you have is enough. That you don't need to hide. That I can love you. And if I can love you, others will too. And you should work on being better for no other reason than life is short. Anne Lamott says, and there's no clear sense of in Christian literature where this following quote comes from. It may have just been a bumper sticker, but she says, God loves you just the way you are, and God loves you too much to to stay that way. That's my message to you. That's my sermon. Every year, at every moment, that's the behavior I want to model to you through thick and thin, and try to do it calmly. I love you. God loves you. Be yourself. That's enough. And don't let that stop you from becoming your best self this year and every year.